Have your thighs ever chafed? Chafe is no joke, but thanks to Mega Babe, it's also no problem. Mega Babe's Thigh Rescue glides onto skin so that chafe is a thing of the past. Experience what 10,000 five-star reviewers rave about at megababebeauty.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
A report released today, which you may have heard referenced on our news bulletins earlier on, shows that there was a record 18,605 calls to the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre's National Helpline last year. An extraordinary volume. Rachel Morrow is the CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, and she joins me. And in just a moment, I'm going to be talking to Sarah Grace, who's a solicitor, author and survivor of sexual assault, for to find out a little bit more about her story. But Rachel, let me start with you. I have to say I fell off my chair when I saw those figures, that amount of people, 18,605 calls to your service alone, because there are other services out there.
For having me in studio today. The figures are the most we've ever received in terms of calls to the helpline. You're right, it's a phenomenal number of people who are reaching out for help. And in that way, it's really encouraging that people know where to find it. And Dublin Rape Crisis Centre runs that helpline 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, so that we're there whatever the time, the day, the night or the week that people need help. I suppose the issue of sexual violence in Ireland is huge. It's of epidemic proportions. Women, on average, will experience sexual violence. One in two women will experience sexual violence during their lifetime, and one in four men will. So it's something that we can't ignore. And we're glad that people are calling us so that we can handle those calls. What we've noticed, though, that on those calls, there is a new trend around suicidal ideation. People are also referencing the fact that additional forms of violence are being used in the sexual attacks, and that's concerning us as well. So in some ways, we're welcoming the fact that more people are contacting us, but there are things that we really want to get in front of and change.
Those 18,000 plus calls, is that the tip of the iceberg, do you think?
Absolutely. One in two people won't tell another person if they've experienced sexual violence. So the 18,600 sounds like a really big figure, but you're absolutely right. It's only the tip of the iceberg. There is a huge community of people out there who have never sought help. And that might be because sexual violence is often committed by somebody who is known to you. So it's very difficult to break down barriers, maybe familial barriers, people you know and sometimes love, who commit this horrendous crime against you, and then to perhaps seek justice after that is a difficult thing to do.
What's the most startling part of the report for you?
I think the increase in suicidal ideation, I think that that's really, really concerning. And it might point to the fact that the public mental health facilities in the country are very overburdened. So whereas people might have been able to access other supports outside of Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, they don't exist at the moment, or they're difficult to access. So people are coming to us with increased levels of anxiety and distress, and in some cases, this acute mental health need around suicide. And again, we're really, really happy that they're reaching out to us, but we're concerned about the people who aren't.
And let's talk about the people who aren't. As we said, this is the tip of the iceberg, that 18,000 figure of people who did contact you. What can you do for somebody who is living in this situation right now, who's listening to us right this minute and has never picked up a phone?
We can tell them that there's other ways to contact us. Like, I imagine that picking up the phone is very difficult, and that's what people tell us. That's why we now offer a web chat service, so that people can just go onto their computer right now and type in some questions, or just make that first point of contact. We also offer our services in, I think, 250 different languages. So for anybody who isn't able to maybe communicate in English and perhaps wouldn't be listening to this programme, but there are services out there that we can facilitate so they can have therapy, they can talk to our crisis counsellors in the language of their choice. So we're doing loads of different things to try and contact the people who we're not reaching at the moment. But for anybody who's listening to this programme and hasn't yet reached out for help, I can tell you that the people who do contact us have a good experience, that we do talk about healing after sexual violence, and that's something very real and very tangible and very positive that can happen after this awful thing has happened.
And this is the ideal opportunity to give out the phone number for people who may want to contact you by phone who are living with this and have never contacted anybody. How do they contact you?
They call the free phone number, which is 1-800-77-8888, and you can access the web chat service by going to our website, www.drcc.ie.
I'm also interested in the aspect of the report that shows more men contacting you, because there again, there's this stereotypical belief that a service like the Rape Crisis Centre is for women, but it's not.
It's not, and that figure that the CSO published last year, that one in four men will experience sexual violence in their lifetime, shows that rape and sexual violence is an issue that affects men. So we're really glad that the numbers of men contacting us increased last year. We hope that it's going to increase again in 2024. We, like you said, Adrian, we do consider men to be a group that we really want to connect with, and that they know that our services are available to them. Our services are available to anyone. And like I said, that helpline is open 24 hours a day. And if you haven't reached out to us, we want you to.
And so almost 18% of your calls last year were from men. And again, you would urge men to reach out as well.
Absolutely. I think that there's a myth out there that men don't need help, but that's not true. Men can avail of our services and really benefit from them as well. And I also think that maybe friends and family who might be trying to support somebody who's been affected by sexual violence, they can contact us too. Sometimes sexual violence, in fact, always sexual violence, is a really difficult subject to navigate, particularly if it's happened to somebody who you love. So for those men who are listening to us and maybe thinking about someone in their lives who's experienced this awful thing, we can help you as well, support somebody you love.
Do you believe, I know we talk about the figures, which are the highest ever, and we believe it's the tip of the iceberg. Do you believe that sexual violence, you mentioned the word epidemic earlier on, is it that bad? Is it worse now than ever before?
It's difficult for us to tell because the data has been so bad. It just hasn't been collected. So it was collected for the first time over the course of 22 and reported in 2023. And like I said, it showed a very high level of people who would be affected by sexual violence during their lifetime. I don't think that the figures are going down necessarily. And the issues like suicide and increased violence, I think that we really need to think about them and wonder as well why those things are happening, particularly around the increased levels of violence. I think that there is a concern across the public that things like social media, access to the internet more generally at a younger age, that maybe these things...
And access to very severe pornography as well, obviously.
That's being pushed to people. There was a report that DCU carried out and it was published in the last number of weeks, and it showed that the toxic content is not being sought by the people who are seeing it. It is being pushed to them. And that's a very, very dangerous online environment for young people to be in.
I want to just turn to our next guest. And this is Sarah Grace. Now, Sarah is a solicitor, an author and a survivor. And she joins me on the line. Sarah, good afternoon and welcome to News Talk.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Would you remind, Sarah, if you wouldn't mind, remind our listeners of your experience and what you went through?
Yeah, of course. And I might start by including a small trigger warning here, because it does include, you know, like a violent sexual assault. But in 2019, I survived a very violent sexual assault and attack in my own home. And essentially, a burglar broke in through my bedroom window. I did not wake up, and he proceeded to climb on the bed and assaulted me. And so, you know, that was back in 2019. I obviously had very severe PTSD, and I turned to the DRCC for help, for their counseling services. And kind of like Rachel says, not knowing what to expect, I found picking up the phone the first time very difficult. And I think the key message I have for listeners today is pick up the phone, because you just cannot imagine how much, you know, warmth and gentleness is waiting for you on the other side of that line.
The individual who sexually assaulted you, thankfully, is behind bars, was found guilty of aggravated sexual assault, handed a 10-year prison sentence. But that whole process of a court case was extremely difficult as well.
Yeah, it took a huge amount of time, and it's something I talk about in my book a lot. I think the criminal justice system, unfortunately, is, you know, heavily weighted against survivors, and every single step of the way is an obstacle course. And I say this knowing that, you know, I'm a solicitor, so I know some things, and I found it incredibly difficult to navigate. And I think that's what fuels me to call out the reforms that are needed, because if I struggled to understand it, and, you know, I had disclosed to my friends and family what was going on. As Rachel said, one in two people don't, and they're facing this alone. It was tremendously difficult. Probably to me, the worst piece of it all was the disclosure of the counselling records. So we have a practice in Ireland that for any case of rape or sexual assault, the counselling records of the victim will be seized and used as evidence only against the victim to disprove what they are saying.
Explain that to me a little bit more. So you might attend counselling and mm-hmm. the court has a right, or the legal teams have a right, to access your counselling records to be read out in court.
Yeah. Yeah, I was as shocked as you are when I first found that out. And, you know, at the time I was going to weekly counselling sessions and they were, you know, I mean, I really understand the weight of my words. They were life-saving in my view. I would not be here today without them, I don't think. And they were a critical part of my healing. And yet we got to the stage where I had to make a decision between, you know, continuing to go to counselling, knowing that those notes would be taken and read not only by a team of lawyers, I might add, but by the perpetrator himself, which really adds insult to injury, because you can imagine, you know, there's some kind of maybe perverted level of satisfaction there.
I was about to say that individual can read your innermost thoughts almost from your counselling sessions.
Yeah, your deepest, darkest thoughts. And what's worse, you know, again, I was incredibly lucky because I did not know my attacker. He was a complete stranger to me. To the vast majority of survivors, they do know their attacker in some way, shape or form. It might be, you know, somebody from work or somebody, you know, a friend or a colleague maybe. And so for that person with who they do have a kind of ongoing relationship, they might even, you know, see them around in the city where they live, and they have to live knowing that that person has read those notes. It's completely unacceptable. And, you know, that practice is not used in any other type of crime. So, you know, in the case of, for example, Natasha O'Brien, who was so brave in coming forward with her story, you know, because that crime wasn't sexual in nature, you don't use therapy notes, and that's correct. That is the right approach. So why are we using this practice in Ireland for, you know, people who are incredibly vulnerable and in an incredibly fragile state, already having to navigate so many obstacles? It's completely outdated and, you know, personally, I think, inhumane.
I know you've been in direct contact quite regularly with Justice Minister Helen McEntee. Progress is being made, but is it being made fast enough in terms of things like that, accessing your counselling records?
Yeah, I have to say, look, I have tremendous respect for Minister McEntee, and I think, you know, she has the patience that I do not in navigating, you know, I'm assuming a lot of internal pressures to bring about change. And change does take time. But one point I feel very strongly about is, you know, this practice could be so easily repealed, in my opinion, with, you know, one provision in an act. And I was disappointed not to see it in, you know, the sexual offences bill that's working its way through the Oireachtas. I understand it's being signed into legislation next week. And I know that, you know, the minister has reaffirmed her commitment to look at this issue and to set up working groups. But I would welcome more transparency from the Department of Justice on this. And I think I have yet to hear one compelling reason for keeping this practice. But if there is, I think, you know, the public has the right to hear it and weigh in on it as well. And we should decide as a country what is right for our
people. I should imagine that a lot of the public, myself included, never realised that this was even a thing. I'm genuinely
exactly.
Shocked by that. Let me ask you just one final question, Sarah. It was difficult, obviously, going for counselling. It was difficult going to court. Was it worth it?
I'm always very careful answering a question like that because, you know, every survivor is completely different. For me and for my case, yes, it was. Now, I say that, you know, fully understanding I'm incredibly lucky to have, you know, first of all, gotten the DPP to agree to pursue the case, to have gotten a guilty verdict and to have gotten an appropriate sentence. And, you know, for a lot of people going through that trauma, maybe even getting that result is not enough. It, you know, for me, it certainly contributed to my healing. But actually, I think to me, what really saved me was the counselling and, you know, having the support of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. The other thing I'm very aware of is counselling is not for everybody, but there are other ways that you can reach out. You know, as Rachel has said, you can, you know, pick up the phone to the helpline or even just put, you know, something, a message in the chat and just ask a few questions. And maybe that's enough. Mm. I think every survivor has to make the decision for themselves. But we as, you know, a nation and particularly the lawmakers have to empower that for people.
Earlier on today here on News Talk, the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, was speaking on News Talk Breakfast. And he had this to say about the report.
Being reported this morning that the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, for example, is recording a record number of calls coming in. And we need to be very aware that a lot of the social media platforms are feeding young men on an hour-by-hour basis a dreadful load of content, glorifying rape, glorifying sexual violence, glorifying misogyny. The stuff, you know, any young person in school, in secondary school, if you ask them who Andrew Tate is, they'll know.
And he has a point. We mentioned this already about online content and the sort of misogyny and hatred that is created in a world that's completely uncontrolled.
You're very right, Adrian. It's so depressing. I don't think that we can let it, I suppose, get us down. Like, I suppose I'm speaking as a woman, that it can be really, really dispiriting when you see and you hear young boys echoing what Andrew Tate says. And like we mentioned earlier, that information isn't necessarily being sought by young boys and young men. It's being pushed at them. So there is a responsibility.
They're also hearing it from their peers.
They're hearing it from their peers. And I suppose going back to my role in DRCC, what I'm worried about is that that's then being played out in real life. And that, you know, I have a daughter and a son, and I really care about what happens to both of them. I don't want my son to see that kind of content. I don't want him to like live and breathe that content. And I equally don't want my daughter to have to experience the consequences of that. So for me, it feels really, really personal. Like, I have been shocked by some of the reports that have been published that have pointed to the content that is out there. I care very, very deeply about our clients as well, and that some of them have, you know, had to use DRCC services because perhaps of what their perpetrator has seen online and then played out in real life.
Just finally, back to the figures we mentioned earlier on, 18,605 calls to your service. Whilst that may appear quite depressing, it also highlights that you're providing a very valuable service that people trust and will actually pick up the phone and call. And obviously you would like more people to call.
We would. So we are 45 years old this year. And right back in 1979, when we were established, we took 76 calls. In 2005, we reached 12,000 calls. And now in 2023, we're recording 18,600. So that is really, really positive because more people are willing to talk about sex and sexual assault and sexual violence. And that's really, really good. But I am very conscious that, again, going back to that national figure, that many people have experienced sexual violence, and each of us will know somebody who's experienced sexual violence, that they may not have reached out yet. The service is there. We really, really want to help you. Sarah has spoken about the value that it can bring to people. And we do talk about rebuilding lives after sexual violence. And we really want to help people to do that.
Rachel Morrow, CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, and Sarah Grace, thank you very much, both of you, for joining us on Lunchtime Live today.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.